So the more I have the happiness of practicing intentionally with the paramis, the more deeply I understand that they really take us, of course, to the heart of the practice, and that they are an accessible, daily, direct doorway to the liberation of the heart and the mind. So I'm going to explore in some reflections now about why the paramis in general are practices of liberation. And then in particular, sila, the second parami, which is a Pali word translated in different ways, sometimes as ethical guidelines or virtue or good relations. I'll explore that one in particular on our practice, on how it can work in our practice, retreat practice, and also how it is a practice of liberation itself. And so first of all, it's helpful to understand what liberation is. And Susie, we've talked about it as a little bit about it. Liberation is what we mean by that in the practice is that liberation is a release, or what happens in the system when the system releases grasping or clinging, or releases ill will, or when delusion is dispelled. And how do we know when we have a taste or a glimpse of liberation? The way we know that, or one of the major ways we know that, is when through the body. The body becomes our barometer. And you can check this out for yourself just right now as I'm speaking. Just bring in your body, understand, or remember, or call up how it feels to be tight and urgent and wanting. And I need to get that over there in order to be happy. What does that feel like in your body? And then we can think of what ill will feels like in the body, that dislike of what's going on. I feel my teeth clenching. It's like, I don't want that. And then what happens in the body when those release? Sense, if you can feel what happens, just call up a sense of, ah. Joseph, I've been hanging out a little bit with Joseph Goldstein, and he teaches consistently about liberation in the body in small moments of release that we experience every day. And he has a lot of practices of noticing in the body, that noticing that small moment of release. And he has one of his practices when he notices something tight, he notices his body tight, is he's got a mantra and he says, nothing to want. And just as I say that, something happens in my body. And he goes like this with his hands. This is what happens for him. He said, this is what happens. Can you get a sense of that? If you may not have a sense of it now, but we can keep our radar out for this. Just that little moment of, and I have a practice that I find very helpful in terms of just cultivating or encouraging, setting the conditions for this release, this small moment. And that's often, we can tune into the body. You can do this right now, just tune in. Often when I tune into my body, there is, I don't say often, but frequently, kind of a low level I don't have to say it, right? A low-level kind of tightness, a low-level kind of urgency. And just noticing that can sometimes, just noticing it, can sometimes, it can sometimes release. And then sometimes I drop the word ease in. Susie was talking this morning about the parami of energy, virya. You can sometimes be too much energy, too strivey, too tight, or too loose. I'm often on the strivey end. And so if I drop the word ease in on the exhale, let's check it out just right now. Just whisper it in, ease on the exhale. That can invite in my body a sense, a small little sense of ease, or a little sense of softening, or a little sense of settling. And so as we become more familiar with this, we can understand what supports the tightening and what can support the small moments of release and cultivate that. And so the paramis, each of the paramis, are a doorway into this, what we can understand as small moments of liberation. Small moments of freedom. But they happen more than we think they do. And so beginning to tune into these through the doorways of the paramis can be really helpful. And so I'm going to just list some of the paramis and just briefly say, you know, metta and generosity and renunciation. What they do is, because they're giving practices, in renunciation we're letting go of something, we're giving. This is the opposite of grasping. And so these practices in themselves can erode the tendency to grasp. Truthfulness supports a clear seeing of how things are and dispels delusion. Delusion can be understood as either in a couple of ways. One, not seeing when grasping and ill will, aversion are operating. We don't see that, we're in delusion, and it just operates with great abandon. And then also so we can see clearly. If we're not seeing ill will and aversion, we can be in delusion. Or if we're not seeing clearly the way of things, if we're not seeing clearly how things are, the way things are, we're just not looking, that can be a delusion. And when we notice, when we come to a place of, oh, that's what's happening, there can be a sense of settling. There can be a little sense of, oh, yeah, that's it. Wisdom is all about how to cultivate peace and liberation. Patience and equanimity can support our capacity to be with the difficult with less aversion. And so what all of these are doing is helping to decrease the amount of ill will or grasping in our patterns and increasing the generosity and goodwill and sense of non-grasping in our patterns and in our patterns of mind and heart. And so in this way, this is how they are liberation practices in and of themselves. And I have a sutta that I really enjoy that speaks about this. It's a sutta that speaks about the Brahma Viharas naming two of the parami, metta or kindness and equanimity. But this sutta can really be applicable to all the paramis and all wholesome states, because this is how wholesome states and the paramis operate in the mind and the heart, is that they decrease this sense of grasping and increase our sense of contentment. And so the sutta is Majjhima Nikaya 43. And The Buddha is saying, and what, householder, is the immeasurable deliverance of mind? And so householder, he's speaking directly to us in our lay life. Here, what is the immeasurable deliverance of mind? And that's a way of saying, what is liberation in the mind and the heart? What is the immeasurable deliverance of mind? Here, a practitioner abides, pervading one quarter, so one quarter of the universe, or one quarter of our experience, with a mind imbued with kindness. Likewise the second, likewise the third, likewise the fourth. So above, below, around, and everywhere. And to all as to herself, she abides, pervading the all-encompassing world with a mind imbued with kindness. Abundant, exalted, immeasurable, without hostility and without ill will. This is called the immeasurable deliverance of mind. And so the Buddha is pointing directly to the qualities of the heart, which can cultivate a sense of our mind and heart without hostility, without ill will, imbued with kindness, imbued with the wholesome qualities. And so this is called the immeasurable deliverance of mind, these practices which diminish ill will and grasping. And when those diminish, the wholesome qualities of non-grasping, of generosity, of goodwill can rise on their own. And so these are liberation practices because they release aversion, because they release greed, and also they help release the delusion of our tight sense of self. And it connects us, this sutta connects us to beings everywhere and our relationship, our good relationship with all beings. And this is coming into the area of sila, of our relations with ourselves and others. This is what Thomas King says about this. Thomas King is a author and indigenous elder, really, Cherokee and Greek background. And he says that, he's speaking about all my relations, this sense of sila. He says, all my relations is at first a reminder of who we are and of our relationship with our friends, family, and relatives. And then more than that, all my relations is an encouragement for us to accept the responsibilities we have within this universal family by living our lives in a harmonious and moral manner. For myself, that sense of sila as a way of living with all our relations, including our relationship with ourselves, that really resonates with me as a way of understanding sila. And I wanted to bring his quote in today because it's International or National Indigenous Day. And the events of reconciliation that are happening across the country right now are really, I think, a great example of sila in action. And you know, this harmonious, this intention to create, to build harmonious relationships with our diverse communities. And we're doing our part here by cultivating our harmonious heart that then we will take out into the world. And so I have a poem also about this. And this poem is from Mary Oliver, who we mentioned many times today already, but I want to bring her in because for me, she's the it's also Pride Week this week. And Mary Oliver being one of, I consider her the poet laureate of the lesbian community. And so this is a poem about sila and the metta, the kindness that can be entwined with it, that comes as a result of sila, that can nurture the heart and its connection with beings, connection with all beings. Not all the beings in this poem may surprise you, But this is a part of our Sangha that she's talking about. This poem is called In Praise of Craziness of a Certain Kind. On cold evenings, my grandmother, with ownership of half her mind, the other half having flown back to Bohemia, spread newspapers over the porch floor. So, she said, the garden ants could crawl beneath as under a blanket and keep warm. And what shall I wish for myself? But being so struck by the lightning of years, to be like her with what is left, that loving. You know, one of the best teachings, one of the teachings I had, the most powerful teaching I've had on the paramis was from Tanisero Bhikkhu. Because when I've sat with him several times, and we're actually very lucky that he's come to Saskatoon many years now. Usually on the July long weekend. I haven't heard if he's coming this year. But he's one of the most prolific translators of the Pali Canon in the Western world. And one day I asked him, you know, this reminds me of, you know, I asked him, what's my purpose in life? And he said, well, if you think your purpose in life is to leave a legacy, you're setting yourself up for suffering. But if you think your purpose in life is to cultivate inner qualities, those can enrich your day every day. And you can also take that with you. Take those with you when you leave this body, when this body dies. And that transformed my understanding of my purpose in life. Like, I used to think I had a big destiny I had to meet. That's a lot of pressure. Like, of course, we're all unique in this world, but this is doable, this purpose in life, to develop inner qualities, to develop the paramis. And now, the Dalai Lama suggested a practice that daily, at night, we can reflect back on the day and say, what parami did I develop today? What parami? What qualities have I developed today? And he said, that you can rest in, that is a meaningful day. That is a meaningful life. And so this poem, you know, what shall I wish for myself? But to be like her with what is left, that loving. And I do think those qualities not only help us to be grounded and liberated in this moment, but are, you know, we can certainly, with every breath and as we make the transition to the next, whatever's happening next, these qualities can be our allies and our friends, our relatives. And so one thing I realize is that as we become more tuned to the barometer, the Sila barometer, it can feel sometimes like if we can touch a painful place, because sometimes our Sila maybe isn't in alignment. And so along with the increase of sense of connection and care, we can touch difficult times sometimes. And this isn't an indication of something gone wrong. It's just an indication that we're becoming more sensitive to when we're out of alignment. And I had an example the other day. I was going on a little trip out of town. And I was talking with a friend. I was going to visit some friends, and was talking with another friend who wasn't going to go. She didn't know I was going. And I decided not to tell her because I didn't want her to feel left out. Maybe that had a good intention. Maybe it was a little bit of not a, merely an adult response. She can take care of herself. But that's what I did. And afterwards, I thought, I could not stop being agitated. So agitated. And I started getting grumpy. And then I found myself on the phone with a Sask Energy employee who wasn't doing what I wanted them to. And I am embarrassed to say, because I'm sure they recorded the, you know, you get the little record. This call will be recorded for monitoring purposes. Well, they got me recorded, losing it with the Sask Energy employee. I'm going to call back and apologize. But I realized it was not because of that. It was because I was so upset about this out of alignment with Sila, with my friend. And what it was just that I had lied. It was an omission. But there was a lie. It was a lie in my heart. And I couldn't settle. And until I realized, oh, it was, I lied. And I'm feeling this block now between her and me. It was just a small thing, but so sensitive. But once I realized that's what it is, then things settled. That's an example of when we touch the truth of what's happening with Sila, the system can settle. Or our out of alignmentness with Sila, our system can settle. And that's a small glimpse of the release of clinging and ill will. That's a moment also. That's a moment. A small moment, as Joseph would say. Taking a deep breath there, just a small moment. We need to pay attention to those moments. And so we can pay attention to those moments here on retreat. This is our work with Sila. This is our work with Sila. And I like to think of it as abiding. The Buddha was inviting us to abide in metta, abide in the wholesome qualities, and we can abide in our Sila. Abide in our Sila. And as Susie was saying this morning, it's hard for many of us to abide in our good qualities. Your friends can tell you all about your good qualities. But it's hard for us to list them sometimes and feel it in the heart. And I find as I work with it more, I'm starting to get a little glimpse. I can feel it in there a little bit. That I've been, spoken about this with yogis. I just remember many people. I invite a yogi or a practitioner to sense into their goodness, and people will say, I can't do it. It's too hard. It's uncomfortable for me. And then we get to unpack the societal messages we have about never feeling into your goodness. It's too selfish. It's too conceited. We get messages like that are very deep. Don't toot your own horn. Anyone heard of that? Don't toot your own horn. Something bad will happen. Mm-hmm. Toot your own horn. So I think the Buddha can help us out with this. Here's another sutta. This is the instructions to Mahanama on liberation in daily life. So the Buddha is instructing Mahanama on how to find liberation in daily life. This is a translation by Bhikkhu Sujato. And so the Buddha has been telling Mahanama several ways to find liberation in daily life. And so he says, furthermore, there is the case where you recollect your own virtue. At any time when a disciple of the Noble Ones, that's us, is recollecting their virtue, their mind is not overcome with passion. Passion, grasping. Not overcome with aversion. Not overcome with delusion. Their mind at that time is unswerving, based on virtue. It goes directly to liberation. And when the mind is unswerving, the disciple of the Noble Ones gains a sense of the goal. That's a sense of liberation. A sense of the Dhamma. Gains joy connected with the Dhamma. In one who is joyful, rapture arises. In one who is rapturous, the body grows calm. One whose body is calmed experiences ease. In one at ease, the mind becomes concentrated. I'm going to read it again because this is the Buddha saying, reflect on your own virtue. We have permission and encouragement. So this recollect your own virtues. And the Buddha goes on to say this, and what's noticeable for me in this is not only this encouragement to reflect on our own virtue, but also that virtue can lead to a sense of liberation, a sense of the Dhamma, a sense of the understanding of the teachings. Joy gains joy. So these are things we can watch for in our experience. If I can touch that, is there a sense of joy there? Joy, rapture arises. Rapture, or we can call rapture like a sense of a deeper sense or a kind of a body sense of joy. And then when we have that sense of nourishment in the mind, of sukha in the mind, of happiness in the mind, the body can grow calm and then easeful and then concentrated. And when we're concentrated, we can see things more clearly, which enables liberation. Again, we can see more clearly how to liberate the mind and the heart. So beautiful, beautiful progression. It starts with virtue, reflecting, recollecting our own sila. And then the Buddha goes on to say, Mahanama, you should develop this recollection of virtue while you are walking, while you are standing, while you are sitting, while you are lying down, while you are busy at work, while you are resting in your home, crowded with children. And so this is our practice on retreat and in life, recollecting our virtue in all of these different ways. And so how do we recollect our virtue? And how do we cultivate that recollection? And this is where I feel like the abiding practice comes in handy. The first sutta was about abide in kindness. How do we abide in our virtue, in our sila? So the first step, I think, is to recollect it or notice it. And so as we're here on retreat, we can begin to notice our sila. We can bring it up consciously, intentionally. We can want, first of all, the sila of your presence here. The dana, the generosity of your presence here, of your kind. We've all taken the precepts, these trainings in sila. So the fact that you've taken these trainings in sila and are here supporting this harmonious community is a cause that you can recollect that. So we recollect it. You notice that the sila of your bell ringing, the sila of your noble silence, the sila of, how we walk together in the food line. I noticed sila this morning, people were offering other people mats who didn't have mats. I noticed a mat moved over there, and then a mat moved over there, and I gave a mat, and someone gave me a mat. There's a lot of sila. Small things like that. And the sila, the kindness, the harmonious relationship with yourself. When we have a cup of tea, when we tuck ourselves into bed, this is caring sila for ourselves. Notice these small moments. And so this is the recollecting part. And then we can just gently stop and notice, this is goodness. And now what might happen at that moment is the mind and the heart might slide off. Yeah, it's spree. Slide off because we got the message, I can't toot my own horn. Or we've got the message, there might arise an unheard thought in the mind, an unheard belief in the mind, and we might notice an agitation rising in the body. So it might slide right off the reflection of our goodness, and that's really important to notice. That's not a bad thing. It's really important to notice that. Because then we can just be non-judgmental about that, just allow that. That's a part of our practicing. That's a part of the whole process. And then next time, we just bring it back again very gently. The more we can bring it to the moments of goodness, to the moments of sila, the more the mind will be able to stay. And we can feel it, the goodness in the body, in the mind, in the heart, even if it's just for a millisecond before the mind slides off again. And then we begin to be able to feel it in the body. This is where the body comes in so handy. This morning, Susie led us in a beautiful body scan. We're just becoming more conversant with the body, with the sensations in the body. And so that when we, as we become more, build our capacity to be with the body, just the sensations of the body, then we can bring that capacity to how sila feels in the body. How does our goodness feel in the body? And we can, and so then we can begin to notice how it feels. And if we can rest there for 2 or 3 breaths, great. That's abiding in the sensations of sila in the body, in our sensations of goodness, in knowing ourselves as our good heart. And the more we do that, we build up our capacity to be with it, the more ill will and aversion towards ourselves can decrease, and the more care and generosity can increase. We're just building the capacity. And sila has 3 interesting layers. The first maybe aspect of sila is when we took the precepts yesterday, we agreed to abstain from something. So that's one way of understanding sila, that we abstain or refrain from taking that which isn't freely offered, for example. And then that's one layer of sila. And then another layer of sila that rises as we abstain is the cultivation of the fruit of what is cultivated when we abstain from this kind of behavior. So we cultivate then a sense of care, a sense of connection, a sense of kindness, a sense of our own goodness. And then the third layer or level of sila is then when that becomes second nature. It becomes second nature to be able to tune in to our goodness. And this is a place of, as we can tune in more and more, my experience of this is that this is another, brings us home to a sense of inner sufficiency. So the grasping that takes us into suffering, as we decrease it, and as we increase what we're increasing is the grasping is based on a sense of insufficiency, not enough. And as we gradually erode that, we cultivate a sense of sufficiency in our own hearts. This sense of coming home to ourselves, to our place in our own heart and in the world. This sense of sufficiency is another way I understand liberation. It's a release of ill will, grasping, and delusion, and a coming home to our sense of sufficiency. I'm going to read a poem called Abiding. Speaks about this sense of sufficiency and also the sense of sila that can connect us to the wider world. Just going to pause for a moment here. Yes, I'll just close with this poem about abiding. So abiding. I love that word. There is nowhere to go when abiding, except into this vast universe of kindness that soaks into every cell of your vast body, permeating everything and everyone. There is nothing to do when abiding, except dwell there, your gaze of kindness, turning everything soft. Maybe I'll just actually close with this passage one more time by the Buddha. This sense of recollecting our own virtues. At any time when a disciple of the Noble Ones is recollecting virtue, their mind is not overcome with passion, not overcome with aversion, not overcome with delusion. Their mind at that time is unswerving, based on virtue. And when the mind is unswerving, the disciple of the Noble Ones gains a sense of the goal, a sense of the Dhamma, gains joy connected to the Dhamma. In one who is joyful, rapture arises. In one who is rapturous, the body grows calm. One whose body is calmed experiences ease. In one at ease, the mind becomes concentrated. Practitioners, you should develop this recollection of virtue while you're walking, while you're standing, while you're sitting, while you're lying down, while you're busy at work, while you're resting in your home, crowded with children. We've got some minutes now to just sit.